Blog Talk Radio.
This is a league of A's and BC's. It's green and red and gold and black and blue. This is a league with two official languages and many unofficial languages. It's East versus West, wheat versus iron, love versus hate. This is a league where superstars are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. It's a league of ice, of fog, of mud and wind. And for one Sunday in November, it's the nation's glue. This is a league as diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Johnsons, Moscas, O'Shea's, and Haji Razulis. This is his league, her league, and their league. It's my league, and it's your league. This is our league.
To be honest with you, I'm not very satisfied with the way that the Argos played tonight. I mean, Caleros had a couple better passes, long range, than he did in the past couple of games. However, he didn't do that fourth quarter Tebow magic that we're so used to him seeing.
He just...
From the moment Jeff got here, you know, I've watched him play in college and everything, and I didn't know him before he got here, but I've hung out with Jeff more than anybody else on this team off the field, and I'll tell you that Jeff is an exceptional athlete. He's got a great upside. He's one of the guys that I just want to work with and continue to, you know, just help him hone his skills in to, you know, be that great player that he is destined to be.
Nick is definitely.
Hey, Argo lifers, Argo fans, the Toronto Argonauts fan cruise is on the horizon. 7-night Eastern Caribbean cruise, February 1st through 8th. Argo fans, if you want to live it up, the ultimate cruise party on the high seas may be just what you need. Join reigning CFL Coach of the Year Scott Milanovich, the Grey Cup winning quarterback Ricky Ray, and members of the 2013 Argos cheerleaders on a 7-night voyage to some of the most exotic destinations in the Caribbean. Join the fun as we kick off the Argos Fan Cruise Week in Miami, Florida, with an action-packed tailgate party, including your newest friends. The party continues on board the Celebrity Reflection with exclusive events throughout the week that will have everyone talking. There is no better way than to spend the week by soaking up the sun, enjoying fine cuisine, hitting up the gym or spa, or simply partying the night away.
Okay,
get ready to put your game face on and join the fun. For more information on pricing or to book, please call 416-929-1980. 416-929-1980 or toll free 1-877-510-2751. That's 1-877-510-2751. Book early because this is one huddle you can be a part of with the Toronto Argonaut.
Yes, that's something you can do. And if you look on each of the web pages that every CFL team has, you will see there are events taking place with all the teams. I just wanted to scratch that little issue because we spend a lot of time talking about the teams. We talk about how great the players are and how, you know, they take part in the community. So tonight, I haven't heard from John, so he hasn't asked me to call him. He could be out having a great time. He's a party guy, you know, Friday night, got to have a great time, and that's the important thing that needs to be done. You know, talking about the CFL, when you could go out and have a great time, I think it's not a high priority for John. We'll have to straighten him out. Of course, I could call a couple of my, friends of mine, see what they have to say. Now, I don't know if Manasseh will be here, but I can tell you that for sure Chris Jones isn't going to be here. Him and his wife are going out on date night. They're going to watch a film. I recommend Frozen. It's a great movie to watch if you have children. And as you know, that one of the biggest reasons that makes being a parent wonderful is you can go see Disney movies and not worry about it. It's just something you can do. You're allowed. So, yeah, you get to go watch those movies with the subtle adult jokes that find their way into the film and, for the most part, understood by adults. Now, Manasseh, I don't know if he'll be on, but if he is, I think the main topic of discussion we've heard on this program many a time, that there has been, you know, conspiracy theories when it comes to officiating. Well, this could be something that does give rise to the fact that there might be something wrong with the CFL officiating. Well, as it turns out, Tom Higgins resigns as the CFL director of officiating. Now, as you may or may not know, in many instances, people aren't fired, they quit. And in a few instances, people are fired, but we're told they quit. The question is, has it really been that bad an officiating year, or under his tutelage, if you will? Has the CFL's refereeing standard dropped a tad, or is it possibly now that they've got a little more money in the war chest, thanks to TSN and the TV contract, is it possible they have more money in the war chest that affords them the opportunity to hire someone that they feel would do a better job and create that aura, you know, that aura of credibility? There's nothing that hurts officiating more than a lack of credibility. My goodness. But having said that, I don't know if that's the case here, and we're not going to find out, because how do you go to the CFL and say, did you fire the guy and was he that bad? Or did he quit because he didn't think you were helping him to create a better environment for his officials to be more effective? There's lots of reasons why people leave. And not all of them are obvious. Some may never be discovered, and that's the way life works. We just know that sometimes people go their separate ways. So, you know, with the CFL expansion draft, a mere 10 days away, there have been some managerial moves that have taken place that people have been anticipating and waiting for with bated breath, and the shoes are beginning to drop. But as I do every show, we try to go through, you know, all the teams, that if there is news from that team, we will mention it. Now, the Alouettes are still, we're starting in the East as usual, the Alouettes are still looking for an offensive coordinator. Now, who will that guy be? Doug Barry and Mike Miller, both one shrunk a two-year contract into a one-year contract, but both of them, or should I say, neither of them will be back. Tracy Ham's name's been bandied about as if to suggest that possibly he could be the guy that fills that space. Now, we're under the distinct impression that Jim Popp will be the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes. Did he do a good job last year? Who are you kidding? He did a great job. He just did not have, he ran out of time. And you know, he really was up against it. In Hamilton, and Hamilton proved to be the best team in the East when it came to when it mattered, which is the only time that one can define whether the team is the best in the East. The one that comes out of the East and goes to the Grey Cup is, in fact, without a doubt, they give them a trophy. It's a half of a Maple Leaf, with the West getting the other half of the Maple Leaf, and they get to hold that. Well, John said that was a bad idea, holding it up in. That could have led to their loss. There is in sports always that, you know, the penultimate trophy, don't touch it. Stay away from it. Let it sit there, because that's not the one you want. And if you touch it, you may be dooming yourself to having that be the main prize that you acquire that year. That's not something you'd like if you're, you know, a fan of that team. So next time, next year, when the CFL teams win the East and West, make sure, don't touch that trophy. That seems to be the general consensus. But, you know, it has been proven wrong. But then again, some people say exceptions make the rule. Now, things have become interesting in Montreal only in the sense that they still need that offensive coordinator. And, you know, they're okay with their defensive staff. They've cemented that up and you know, increased the contracts to extend by 2 years. Now, in the Ottawa Redblacks case, after making all their signings, they now have brought in a head coach. That is correct. They brought in a head coach. Huey Campbell's little baby. Yes, sir. And his little baby's been in the league for a very long time. So there's no problem with experience for him. Awesome pick for Ottawa. And, you know, great pedigree. So Huey Campbell's kid's going to be awesome. I'm sure about that. And best of luck now to the Red Blacks, who can now put a face on their head coach. And I guess he gets to decide who's going to be on his staff. But, you know, that isn't always the case. It really isn't. So in 10 days, the draft will happen, and they will end up with two Canadians and an American, while the teams in existence protect, I think, 11 players. And you know, Canadian and American. And walk away with, hopefully, in their case, some underrated players. Nothing will prove better being underrated than being, you know, that first guy available, you know. So we'll see what happens there. Now, in the Argonaut world, things have gotten interesting. The Toronto Argonauts have hired a defensive coordinator, Tim Burke. Now, he was with Milanovic and won two Grey Cups with Montreal with Milanovic. Now, the question I was trying to read and to find, is this guy going to get the assistant coaching label as well, as did the recently departed Christopher Jones? That could be a very serious, serious question. If not, it means Milanovic will have a little more say in what goes on defensively, and Milanovic seems to be content with the fact that this guy and he, Burke and Milanovic, see eye to eye in how a defense works. Now, when one says that, one would assume possibly that maybe they weren't seeing eye to, he wasn't seeing eye to eye with Chris Jones. But I don't think that's the case. I think you have Chris Jones wanting more authority, wanting to take the next step. He said it last year when he stayed on with the Argonauts that he had every intention of someday becoming a head coach, and last year was not the year. This, in fact, year is the year. So Chris Jones moved over to Edmonton. Now, the Hamilton Tiger Cats, as I said, they do things from time to time, and I want my Hamilton friends to know that they'll be hosting their annual locker room sale next weekend, that Saturday, December 14th, just in time for Christmas, and Sunday, December 15th. Now, it'll be in the football team's facilities, offices, you know, 1 Jarvis Street, not to be confused with the one in Toronto. This is the one in Hamilton. And for the first time, fans can access the locker room used by the Tiger Cats during the 2013 season. Fans will also have the opportunity to purchase game-worn jerseys and equipment, including helmets, gloves, and more. The official Ticats merchandise is also available up to 50% off, and the Tiger Town store will feature the entire Tiger Cats retail line. The locker room will be open on Saturday, December 14th, from 9 in the a.m., to 5 in the p.m., and Sunday, December 15th, from 11 in the a.m. to 5 in the p.m. So, not much news to discuss as far as the Ticats are concerned. C.J. Gable, I'll repeat, says next year is going to be even better, and this has just been a taste for him, and he likes the way it tastes, and he wants back as soon as possible. Now, another move that was made earlier, we can talk about this as well if anybody's arrived at any new comments or opinions on the Michael O'Shea hiring as the 30th head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, this guy doesn't come in with just a little bit of experience. He comes in with 20 years of CFL experience and O Canada, he's Canadian, and that could, you know, render him, you know, a kind of a, you know, a man who understands the game. He's lived the game. And when I say that he's a great coach, he is a great coach. Now, does it mean because he was a special teams coach that he may or may not be, you know, that outstanding? I don't know. We're going to find out. I just know he's a great coach, and wish him all the best when he plays other teams as usual. As an Argo fan and as you as a Saskatchewan fan or a Hamilton fan, you wish the best on your ex-players as long as they don't do well against you. So I'm consistent that way with you in the way you think. We agree that, you know, our team comes first. But that's what I love about the CFL. More about that in a little while. So the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have made their big move for this year. We'll see how that goes. You've got Getzlaff, Bag, Labatt, and Picard, all signed in Saskatchewan to extensions. So it looks like there was some concern at the Rider Green or Riderville that possibly Getzlaff could slip away. Well, it isn't going to happen. He's staying in Saskatchewan. This I don't like as an Argo fan, because this guy's good. Well, Saskatchewan won the Grey Cup this year, and they didn't just win it with Getzlaff, but he was a key component and made a couple of key catches in the playoffs, not just the Grey Cup, to really be an important cog in that machine that is Saskatchewan, that the teams in the CFL are going to have to figure out a way to put a wrench into that motor, because that motor's humming, and dominance is probably a word that may be used in a couple of years down the road. There may be more Grey Cup parades in Saskatchewan. And our friend and former Argo, Ricky Foley, already with 3, could be looking at 4 very shortly. But I sense that there'll be a few teams in the league, especially in the West, that would like to run that idea into the ground. And I think it would be fair to say we could start with the Calgary Stampeders. Now, a key player in Calgary has to be Mo Price. And Mo Price has been signed. So, unfortunately, you know, the terms of the agreement aren't or have not been and appear not to be anytime soon disclosed. And this 28-year-old guy, will not be a free agent. And, you know, 13 starts this year. He was second in the club with receptions, 57, if you can imagine. Receiving yards, 788. And he had 7 touchdowns to boot. So, you know, among the receivers, he had at least 20 catches. You know, he led the team with an average of 13.8 yards per reception after the catch runs. And, you know, he was also named the CFLPA All-Star team. So, dude's got it. And this is another key player for a team that has aspirations of winning the Grey Cup. A disappointing year in conclusion for the Calgary Stampeders, and I'm sure the Calgary Stampeder fans aren't happy with this, the way the season ended. And I've mentioned before, they were further away from the Grey Cup than they were last year. Last year, they made it to the Grey Cup, lost to Toronto. This year, they lost to the Grey Cup winner, but in the Western Final this time, as Saskatchewan went on to beat Hamilton in the Grey Cup. Moving on to Edmonton, Chris Jones is there. No news, you know, this week at least anyway, that we can talk about, other than the fact that Chris Jones is making his best effort to move as quickly as possible to turn this team around, this great franchise. I mean, is there a franchise with a more glorious history in the past 30, 40 years in the Edmonton Eskimos? I think not. I don't know. Winning 5 Grey Cups in a row can kind of do that to you. And that shine doesn't get, you know, scuffed that easy. In fact, I believe they've been called the City of Champions because of the Edmonton Eskimos, as much as the Edmonton Oilers, who went on a pretty good run themselves in the National Hockey League, along, you know, with Wayne Gretzky. And of course, the last cup was won with Messier and Gretzky not there. So Edmonton has a lot to be proud of, and historically speaking, and they're hoping that, you know, what is old will be new again. And that'll be up to Chris Jones. He, you know, has the staff. He has the GM. They have great young players. The question many of the guys have mentioned during our rants, if you will, in our talks, is can they get a front line? Well, that's the biggest question, I guess, right? So, now, the British Columbia Lions, no news is what's news with them. Jacques Chatelain left. As you remember, they parted ways mutually, acceptably, without discourse. They both felt they needed to seek other, you know, connections, if you will. And they have. So we're waiting for BC to tell us who their offensive coordinator is going to be. And before I even take a look at who's on the phone, the last comment I'll make is that, and I see it's Robbie. The last comment I'll make is that the guys are going to have a fun conversation because the head coaches that are being hired were defensive coordinators, and some feel or felt, I among them to a degree, that defensive coordinators don't make great head coaches. So, Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Frank. How you doing, my friend?
Not bad, not bad.
Okay.
So, you know,
one thing that's really getting under my skin.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's Mike O'Shea was a special teams coordinator for Toronto, no?
Yes.
What is he doing as a head coach? He's a rookie head coach.
Yeah, but, you know,
how's that team going to do now? Not good at all.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, Robbie. And
same thing with Chris Jones. He was what, defensive coordinator in Toronto?
Yeah, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think.
He's a head coach in Edmonton.
But I think a defensive coordinator has a level of responsibility that can be leaned on prior to moving on to the head coach.
Well,
I don't think it's the same as a you know, special teams coordinator, if you will, or special teams coach. It's like halfbacks coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or running back coach.
I just hope Tim Burke does a good job in Toronto as a defensive coordinator because he did jack shit as a head coach in Winnipeg.
Well, you know,
I think
that's a fair summation on your part as to what possibly, you know, could be the definitive answer as far as his success in Winnipeg. But I'm not quite sure that his history in Winnipeg has anything to do with what he's going to be doing in Toronto. He isn't the head coach here. He is the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
He has a history with Milanovic. They both coached in Montreal. They both were together and won Grey Cups. You know, basically our friend Milanovic was the offensive coordinator while Timmy Burke was the defensive coordinator, and they had a lot of success. Joining us now is Mike Towns. Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing, Frank?
Not bad, not bad, not bad. So a little bit of action, and you know, you know as much as I do that there have been some conversations here on the CFL show that have insinuated that defensive coordinators don't make good head coaches, but that seems to be the direction the league is going into right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like that's the way they're going because I guess they figure if you get a defensive coach to be a head coach, he's going to also bring along that defense to come along with it.
Yeah, but, you know, like the thing that's really getting to me, well, it's not really getting to me, but Hugh Campbell was a great coach for Edmonton. He was a great coach, right? So they bring his son up in Ottawa to say, okay, here, boom, you're the head coach. He has no experience as a head coach. He's the, I think, defensive coordinator in Calgary and in Edmonton. And it's like, here you go, Mr. Rick Campbell. You know, do what your father did. What
well,
the heck
I
are you talking
that that's,
about?
I don't know that that's a fair statement because it's not
well,
like
no,
he's relying strictly on his father's coattails because he has a history in the CFL. And, you know, being the coordinator on a winning team like Calgary, you know, the same reason why every good team has, like the Argos, they were lucky to keep the guys they had last year. This year, they've lost Jones. They've lost, as you just mentioned, you know, Gaucher to Winnipeg. And that happens. And Calgary's not a, you know, a lousy team. The Argos picked up Milanovic. He was only an offensive coordinator in Montreal, and you know, he came here as the head coach and won a Grey Cup.
Isn't O'Shea from Ottawa?
Yeah, I think he's up from that way. He's Canadian anyway. He's
but I'm pretty sure he's from Ottawa.
But I don't
why
think
didn't
Ottawa
say, "Hey, come on and be our special teams coach"? Or,
well,
you
got to. Well, maybe he wanted to be a head coach. I mean, if someone said to you, I want you to be chief water boy for X team, and another team said, I want you to be the head of, you know, the head of the training staff. I mean, you wouldn't care where you were going. Come on.
Yeah. Well,
you would care if it's what you really want to do.
Yeah, as I'm just going to throw this in here, as Stefan Jones would call me, the aquatic engineer. I'm like,
there
oh my
go.
God. He's like, yeah, you're the former aquatic engineer. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, but isn't that what it's all about? You know,
yeah,
Mike,
let's
give Mike a chance to respond to what we're talking about. What concerns do you have for a guy like O'Shea going from special teams to head coach in Winnipeg?
Well, my concerns is with O'Shea never being a head coach and never having any head coaching experience. I think crunch time, say give or take 3 minute mark of a game, and say Winnipeg is down by maybe 4 points, and they got to go 100 some yards down the field. I mean, lack of coaching also dictates what type of plays that you might call to try to get that ball in the end zone or get it down there so you can have a chance to score or take the lead in the game. I think with O'Shea being a defensive coordinator, I mean, he's going to have his bumps and bruises being a head coach, but this is going to be a learning process. And, you know, being a defensive guy going to a head coach, everybody's going to have to learn someday while they're on the job. And this is going to be a learning process while he's on the job. So, you know, that's my biggest concerns, the play calling that you're going to call during crunch time when the game is on the line.
That's what it's all about right there.
So, is it possible also, and this is where I'm gonna sort of be the devil's advocate. No, not the devil's advocate. I'm gonna try and agree with you guys, and this is the way I'm gonna agree with you guys. The problem with hiring somebody who needs experience means that you're giving in to it's instant winning. You know, you're giving that up, and you're going with the premise that, you know, we need to lose before we get better. Is that maybe what Winnipeg is saying? Is basically they're saying that, or is it that they hired a guy who's a grateful new head coach, which gives the comfort level to the GM Walters, you know, that he has a little more authority, and there won't be that, you know, that hissing match that may take place between an experienced coach and an inexperienced GM. I think what you got in Winnipeg is you got both. You've got an inexperienced GM along with an inexperienced coach, and time will tell.
Yeah, time is going to tell, and I think Mike O'Shea got the head coaching job because really, really, Frank, if you think of the names that's out there, I mean, do you think Winnipeg would have hired Cavis Reed after the season he had in Edmonton?
I don't think so.
No.
And what's the guy? The guy named that just got fired in BC, the offensive coordinator?
Chapdelaine. Jacques Chapdelaine.
Now you see BC's office kind of struggled. Now, I ain't going to say kind of. It struggled. So they had to make some changes. when you have an offensive coordinator like the guy, I can't say his last name. So when you have a guy like him that's struggling as an offensive coach, you're not gonna roll your dice and bring him in as a head coach.
No.
Nor will you bring somebody like Kavis Reed that had a miserable season in Edmonton as a head coach of your team when you're trying to get over that hump. So it really wasn't a lot of big names out there that can bring in to change that team around. So what they did was say, hey, what we're going to do, we're going to bring in a new face. He hasn't had a lot of experience in coaching, but I'm sure he's going to put veteran people around him. And with the pedigree of Mike O'Shea and a knowledge of football on his own, we might have a losing season, but I can see that our team is going to make steps to improve year by year, because they're going to probably give him a 3-year window at the most.
Okay, so if I'm to understand what you're saying, and I'm going to try and put words in your mouth, but you correct me if I'm wrong. At the end of the day, O'Shea has a winning reputation by virtue of where he comes from, and the other candidates didn't have winning in their pedigree, so they would prefer to roll the dice with a guy they're not sure about that wins, as opposed to maybe somebody who hasn't done well recently. Which hangs
exactly
a lot on those.
Exactly what I'm saying.
It hangs a lot on those coaches, doesn't it, Mike? Like, those poor guys, like Kavis Reed, he was hung out to dry, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
Yes, he was. He was. And it wasn't his fault. He just played with the hand he was dealt. I mean,
that's
losing
right.
Ricky Ray, and then you went through a quarterback carousel last year when you was going with Stephen Giles, Mike Riley. Well, I'm talking about the year before, 2012, when they didn't even have Mike Riley. You had Kerry Joseph, and then you had Stephen Giles.
Yes.
So, and you know, old grandfather time, Kerry Joseph played way better than Stephen Giles did. And Stephen Giles came in as your starter.
Yep.
You know, Stephen Giles couldn't even get Fred Stephens the ball. When Fred Stephens was getting the ball, that's when Kerry Joseph came in, and they played the old Kerry Joseph-Fred Stephens connection. That's what they did. And that was how they was going to win. You have to get him the ball, and when you don't have a quarterback that can't get you the ball, your season is going to be very rough. And with Edmonton being the same way this year, when they traded Ricky Ray away, even though they got Mike Riley, the offensive line sucked. And I think by the fourth or fifth game, I think Edmonton stopped listening to – they put their heads down and really they tried to compete, but they already know physically they were outmatched and it wasn't really nothing they can do. They can go out there and try to win and try to make it close, but at the end of the day, they kind of figured their number was going to be called and it was going to be an L at the end of the game.
I believe
and you're not going to bring
that
in a coach. You're not going to bring in a coach that just had a losing season to try to bring in – to stop the bleeding of this losing season for this team. It just ain't going to happen.
Well, I happen to think that Kavis, his success was doomed the moment the GM decided to tell him how to coach publicly. That's where it all ended for him. And that's too bad, because in reality that's what happened. And I might have taken a flyer on a guy like that, because the experience that he went through last year, I think in my mind, could be very handy in a place like Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Now, you can bring Kavis Reed in as maybe your offensive coordinator or maybe your defensive coordinator or something like that for him to prove himself over again in a couple of years, especially if he comes in Winnipeg and be offensive coordinator and Winnipeg makes it to the playoffs or the finals and they end up losing. I mean, especially if the offense is clicking and putting up numbers. I mean, he can always redeem himself, but he just got the fattest spot to redeem himself in.
Well,
if he goes down to the U.S. and be college or you know, CIS or whatever, he can redeem himself.
When I read the story with Tim Burke, where Tim Burke was talking about coming back as an assistant after being a head coach, he feels very comfortable in the fact that he has learned something as a head coach that's transferable and usable as, you know, an assistant. And in this case, a defensive coordinator. He thinks he's a better defensive coordinator because of his experience as a head coach. And I'm inclined to agree with him, and I don't think he's blowing smoke. because he understands now, you know, where the, you know, where the buck stops and how you can help that buck stop in the right place. You don't necessarily have to decide when and where it's going to stop, but you can help
right.
the person who's going to do that make the right decision because you understand the bigger picture better than you did before you were a head coach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
so as far as Michael O'Shea is concerned, I agree with you 100%. The key for him is going to be who he hires to help him.
Yeah.
Will
yep.
it be good chemistry? Because, you know, it's not just a matter of you know, being a good coach. It also has to, you know, they have to, I know this sounds like a cliche and we hear it all the time, you know, they have to be on the same page. You know, they have to work as a team. And all that really means is, you know, O'Shea's the boss and the guys have to do their best to build the team and prepare the team in a manner that Michael O'Shea feels comfortable in. And that's
mm-hmm.
the hardest part because they all have egos,
you know what,
right?
Right. And the upside to Michael O'Shea going to Winnipeg, and this is no knock on Toronto, but if Michael O'Shea had the type of personality that the players liked in Toronto, you know, a guy that's a get-in-your-nose face, we can like him, but he's a good defensive coach, you're going to be surprised on what free agents from Toronto might follow Mike O'Shea over to Winnipeg to help turn that team around.
Absolutely. Isn't that part of what a coach does? Is he knows
uh-huh.
who the good
yes,
players
sir.
Are, and the players know him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it,
yep.
At first of all, it's like an advertisement. They're saying, we want to play football, and we want Mike O'Shea to decide for us, you know, how it's going to work. And
because mm-hmm. Mike O'Shea, he's going to know on Toronto, okay, like he might say, okay, I really know that this second stringer that I have that's getting playing time, He's better than his first stringer, but this guy been here for the longest, and the head coach likes him. So he's going to be a free agent. So I'm going to bring him over here to my team to help build my team up, and he's going to be my starting corner or my starting safety. You know, it's all about who he brings in, and who he brings in might bring in other players from other teams that have chemistry with other players and know other players. So he's not in a bad situation. It's just it's going to be a learn – on the go type thing.
You got me nervous, Mike. You know why? Because that means that we got Jones in Edmonton, and we got O'Shea in Winnipeg, and
mm-hmm.
those two guys are going to do what Steinauer did this past year with Hamilton. You know, when
yep.
the Argos dropped some guys, he knew what guys to grab and to keep.
Mm.
You know,
yep.
he knew the players that left. That were a lot better than maybe the fact that they were jettisoned by the Argos, you know, and the Argos' uh-huh. interpretation of their ability, you know, they knew better, or he knew better, Steinauer knew better. So now you got another two guys that have been up close and personal with all the Argo players, and that goes to what we were talking about earlier, where you know this is not only do the successful coaches get you know basically picked off teams like Montreal, they lost Milanovic and Burke back. You know, back in the day, and you know these guys came here, you know, and they become an asset for Toronto. Now the same is going to be true now for these other teams that pick up these ex Argo coaches, and those teams are
mm-hmm.
going to know what the Argos have got. I mean, it's a gift that keeps giving. Not only do they know what they've got, so they can you know make some trades or pick up some free agents, they also know how the team plays.
Yep.
You know, because they're in the inner circle, right? So, yeah, so
uh-huh.
Mike O'Shea, you know, is now in the Western Division. Now, he hasn't spent a lot of time in the Western Division. So, you know, in that sense, he won't be playing the Eastern teams as much as Winnipeg did last year. It'll be less. So, you know, that might not be as big an advantage as he'd like. But I'm inclined to agree with you that what they did was they hired a guy that they felt after a year or two would be one of the better coaches in the league. That's what they're gambling on.
Mhm. Yeah. And he's an up and comer, so you know, like I said, it's not going to take Mike O'Shea years and years to turn that franchise around. Really, it's not, because he's not going to go in there and not surround himself with veteran guys, you know, coaching staff that can also put some whispers in his ear, you know, help him out, you know. I mean, it's a win-win situation for both sides, to tell you the truth.
Well, ability is the key, and I think they believe that he's able to lead that team out of the wilderness, which is where they find themselves at this point. They haven't had too many great years yet. You know, you go back a few, and they were in the Grey Cup. So, you know, as quickly as things can fall apart in the CFL, they can jump back together again, you know, very quickly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they really can. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what Winnipeg is going to be like this year, really.
Absolutely. When we come back, let's talk about the officiating director resigning, Tom Higgins, after this break. My goodness. It seems strange that he did that, but, you know, whatever.
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos cheerleaders.
Well, there you go, and what better introduction for Saskatchewan than our next caller. Introduce yourself.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on?
Pretty good timing there, eh, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It wasn't planned, trust me. I didn't know Mike was going to call.
Yeah.
just totally accidentally. His number came up as soon as I picked the tune to play. Our buddy Robbie had to go. He has a busy night, and he needs to start it up. And I really appreciate his time on here. Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate your time. Well, Manasseh, you weren't here for our original conversation, and you might as well add your 2 cents, or in the case of the new no-pennies policy in Canada, your nickel's worth of conversation. Mike O'Shea, hired by Winnipeg, special teams coordinator. Now he's head coach in Winnipeg. Plus, minus, what he needs to do, what he can't do, what he shouldn't do?
No, I think, we talked about it on Wednesday. I think it's a great hire, in my opinion.
For what reason?
Yeah, because I think when you pair him up with Kyle Walters and having two new guys, you know, with new ideas and... You know, because Winnipeg knows they have to be aggressive now. They're no longer in the East. They're in the West where all the big dogs are, so they got to really step their game up. And I think I like their approach so far, and I've liked everything they've said, and I think these guys are going to be successful.
What kind of hires does he need to make now?
Oh, it's obvious. He's got to go after the best he can possibly surround himself with. I probably expect Kari Jones to come over and be the offensive coordinator. I don't know who he's planning on defense. I don't know if he has any connection with people back in Toronto or he's going to bring someone over from Toronto, but I think most likely it's Kari Jones as the offensive coordinator.
Is that what you think will happen?
Yeah, that's what the reports were saying, that I guess in the front office, the CEO, I forgot his name, the big guy, he wanted Kari Jones as head coach, and then the GM, Kyle Walters, wanted O'Shea, and the reports were saying that they basically came to the decision that they'd have Kari Jones as offensive coordinator, and they'd give the head coaching job to O'Shea.
And you know, it is what you said, and that is that right now the situation is very simple for them. They know they're in a tough division, and they know that they're going to have to suffer on the short term if they're going to be successful on the long term. And the sacrifice they're making is having guys learn on the job, if you will.
But, you know, they're really not that far off. You know, I know we all think they were that bad. It's just I feel like they're Zach Collaros away from being competitive next year, honestly, because they got so many nice playmakers across the board, and their defense is fantastic. I know they had a couple of hiccups, but they have a ton of playmakers. They just need a quarterback who can, you know, work with that pretty porous offensive line they got, and we all know Collaros is that guy. So I really think
and
they
then,
come over. Yeah.
And then you got O'Shea coming from Toronto too. So, you, like I said, Frank, you never know who Mike O'Shea might pull from Toronto with him.
Yeah, we had a question on the internet from Patty Flanagan, and she was wondering where's Joe Pau-Pau? Well, Patty, he was an interim coach in the CIS, I believe. I'm trying to remember which team to answer your question. That's a good question. You know, is Joe Pau-Pau somebody that could coach again in the CFL? He went to Montreal as a consultant. Is he there still consulting? I'm not sure. Best I can see, I'll look and I'll search what I can. Do you guys how do you guys feel about a guy like Joe Pau-Pau?
I don't know about him, but I was actually waiting. Did you guys already get into the Tom Higgins thing, or are you still waiting on that?
Not yet. I kind of knew that you would want to talk about that, and I did briefly prime the pump at the beginning of the program, as I want to do. No, we haven't. So basically, our feelings are that Michael O'Shea and Walters are two young guys, up and comers, guys who look to have a lot of, you know, talent that can be, worked on and developed by the team, and they can take advantage of that development, that quick development. So they're, next year, maybe they're not in as big a hurry because of the experience that they lack, but they're willing to give that up for longer-term success, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they're not going to be that far off as far as, being contenders. They're not going to be far off at all.
They only need three moves, and I already know exactly what they got to do. Other than Collaros, it's already on the record now. Brandon Picard, center for Saskatchewan, who just got re-signed, he's on the trade block because the Riders are planning on going with Corey Wattman next year. So if they can pick him up in a trade, they got the number one pick in the draft, you know, get another Canadian O-lineman, you plug in that. They already have two solid linemen in Glenn January and in Greaves. That's four, plus you got your center in place. You get your quarterback. They already got a nice group of receivers and running backs. Come on, man. The CFL is amazing. I love the fact that a team can go from the worst team in the league to the Grey Cup. You know, and the Bombers did it 2 years ago. They went from 4-14 in 2010, and in 2011 they were the best team in the East and they went to the Grey Cup. So they already proved they could do it recently, and I think they're going to do it again.
No doubt. Another
set
caller.
That front line up.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike. The next caller. Okay, who's on the line, Mike? And then we'll get to your question.
It's me, Debbie. I'm here.
Hey, Debbie. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Very good. Okay, we'll let Mike finish what he was saying. And Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
Oh no. Only thing I was saying. Hey, Debbie. I was saying that. Winnipeg is going to stack their offensive line up. Now that they're in the West, they're going to build their offensive line up. They're going to build that team up to beat them teams in the West. They're going to take a page from Saskatchewan's book. That's all.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's all they're gonna do. Take a page from their book.
As Mike said, it doesn't take much to turn around a CFL season. Debbie, how about a comment? You got a comment? Question?
That was a great song you played on break.
Yeah, you liked that, did you? Why did you like
I
that?
I did. Because it was green. I just wanted to say that I've noticed over the past couple of shows we're talking more about the business end of the CFL, and I'm learning a lot from you guys. Carry on.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what basically we talk about is what's out there to talk about. Unfortunately, the playing part of the year is freshly over, and now we get to discuss how a team's fortunes can be turned around, and as Mike described, hopefully quickly rather than slowly, and what it'll take for teams to keep up. You know, taking care of business. It appeared this year there were some. There may have been some officiating faux pas that have given rise to the departure of referee and a director of refereeing for the CFL, Tom Higgins. Now, I don't know if there's any truth to that. You know, you never know if somebody really quit or if they got pushed out and they say they quit just for the saving face value. Mike, I know this is one that this is a subject you want to talk about. You asked a moment ago, and there you go. Pick it up, and we'll. You take it first. What does this resignation mean?
From what I was reading on TSN, what they talked about was how Tom is actually looking to get back into either a coaching or a general manager position. And right now, as soon as he resigned, everybody in Edmonton, if you read all the forum and pages out there, they're all clamoring for the guy to take over from, who's the guy they got now, Ed Hervey?
Yeah, Ed Hervey, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, because Tom Higgins was really successful in Edmonton as a coach back in the early 2000s. He won a Grey Cup with them. He was a great general manager. So everyone's saying they're expecting, you know, Ed Hervey to probably get fired after next season if they struggle, and Tom Higgins will take the GM job.
So what does Tom Higgins at this point, what does he do then? Does he go to Edmonton as a consultant? Does Ed Hervey hire the guy that might be replacing him? Does he go to another team as a consultant to get back into the swing of things, if you will? Edmonton's old GM that went, Jeepers Creepers, that went to Hamilton. Do the same kind of thing as he did.
Yeah. Because, you know, him and Leon Rose, the CEO in Edmonton, apparently they have a lot of connections going way back, and he is the one that actually offered him a role as a consultant for the team, and that's why he stepped down. So I think the writing's on the wall for Ed Hervey. I think it's just a matter of time, you know, that he's going to get let go and Tom Higgins will step in as GM.
Yeah, and I guess what the comment that'll be to them privately in the closed room discussion will be, well, when... Make some great moves, you could save your job. But, buddy, we can't go through another year like last year.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it comes down to, right? Winning, you're in.
That and losing. Protect our quarterback, seriously, because if Mike Riley goes through another year like that, man, they're going to take years off his career. Like, seriously.
No kidding. No kidding.
Mike Riley be ready to be traded away from that place, man.
Yeah, for real.
Can't keep getting hit like that, man.
Debbie,
it might not say right. It'll take years off his career.
Absolutely, Debbie. From your position, you know, you use the definition. You said that, you know, you learn a lot, but from your position as a fan, where do you sit with officiating? Have you noticed anything? Have you seen anything that gives you pause as to how it's run or how they how they execute the rules?
Well, I saw a lot of bad calls, not for even just Saskatchewan, but right across the whole organization. Like it wasn't just one team that there were bad calls. I don't know how they run it, to be honest with you. But it didn't look very effective.
You're saying it didn't look very effective by virtue of how many missed or bad calls there were.
Exactly.
How about you, Mike?
There were some calls that weren't made that should have been, and there were some, I think, that were made and shouldn't have been, but I'm a fan.
That's what speaks to consistency, which, in you know, the best the best way I feel that I know a ref is doing a good job or a refereeing team is doing a good job is you don't notice them. As soon as you start to notice them, something's wrong. Mike, how about you?
Very well said. Very well said, yeah.
Well, me, as far as the refs been going this year, the only thing I question with the refs, I question a lot of them, their roughing the passer calls. You know, roughing the passer calls is always questionable. I mean, I don't know what they call roughing the passer. I mean, I know hitting them below the knees.
Mike, questionable because they don't call enough or they call too many?
They call too many. They call.
Okay, I just want to make sure I assume that, but.
You know, I know when you're hitting a guy below the knees, you know, as they say, you can't be hitting him by the knees. I know that's roughing the passer, but some guys get pushed. Some guys get tackled as soon as they throw the ball, and you're getting roughing the passer. I mean, some of the hits don't even be looking like, I mean, I can't really say from a TV point of view that it don't hurt, but, you know, when you're releasing the ball and you get hitting at the same time and you get caught roughing the passer, that's kind of suspect. You know, sometimes you got to let that go. And I just have a problem with too many calls of roughing the passer.
My problem with roughing the passer. Go ahead. No, you go ahead, Debbie, and then I'll say mine.
I agree with what Mike said. A lot of those calls were a momentum. Like the guys were making their play, and all of a sudden it's a roughing the passer. It was just forward motion and momentum that they had going.
Yeah. In other words, they make a commitment to make a hit. They're in midair. And then the passer throws the ball, and they land on the passer without being able to stop. A. B.
Right.
They're going after the passer, and then they get shoved into the passer or tripped. We saw that this year as well, where a guy takes the guy out by the knees. Now he goes flying, and now he hits the passer. It's his fault.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's the kind of stuff that kind of frustrates me, too, because the reason it does, and I can understand why they call it, guys, is what they're doing is they take the point of assuming the guy didn't do it by accident rather than say, was that an accident, I think. What do you guys think? I mean, why would they make the call if the guy's in midair without control of where he's going to end up? And then the passer, I mean, how do you blame the guy for that? I try figuring that out when I watch that play. I don't understand it. I really don't. But I guess, is it maybe, you know, like I said, they're erring on the side of not hitting the quarterback, basically. They just don't want the quarterbacks to be hit. And if it, you know, looks like a duck, that's good enough. Let's call it a penalty. It doesn't have to walk like a duck or talk like a duck.
I think
go ahead, Debbie. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you can tell as a fan, I don't care who you are, but you can tell when a hit is malicious. And a lot of those that I saw, the roughing the passer, some of them were malicious, I'll admit, but the ones that I think were called wrong didn't look malicious. It was just part of the play, the momentum.
And I agree with Debbie. And, you know, in some points of the game, them roughing the passer calls also makes it also makes the result of the outcome of the game. I mean, you could be sitting up here down by three, team down by three, and they get a bullcrap roughing the passer call, and they 15 yards down the line, and then they score. You know, some of them calls makes the outcome of the game.
I can actually, and I think Michael agree. We can probably flash back through the season, even in the playoffs, where a play like that extended an offensive run that eventually ended up creating the winning play.
Mm-hmm.
We actually saw that this year, I think. Even in the Grey Cup, but it didn't affect the play. But still, the possibility, as you say, Mike, is there, and as Debbie agrees. So do you make, the flagrant fouls that Debbie was referring to, do you make the punishment a little more and then try to, you know, separate the stuff that's not legitimate as far as a penalty is concerned and just punish the guys who do the real stuff a little harder to make that little bit of separation, almost like just basically to deter guys from doing that? Is that what we do? Is that what we hope they do?
Yeah. That's what I hope they do because, I mean, you know, by you being refs, you're close up, you're closer than anybody than the TV guys on TV and guys in the stands. You can, you know what a malicious hit is compared to forward motion is. And if it looks like a malicious hit, go ahead, tag a 15, 20-yard penalty. You do it. But if it's not a malicious hit and they just go with the forward motion and push the quarterback with their hands, there's no need for no roughing the passer. There's no need for it.
So, in other words, go ahead. No, go ahead, Debbie.
If you make the penalty a little more grave, it makes the ref more accountable to call a right penalty.
Yep. And what you guys are saying is that there may be too many, there's too much, it's too equal for an incidental piece of contact, an incidental contact, and a one that's intentional. There should be a separation of those two when it comes to the
right.
calls
yep.
by the referees.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure that's what they try to do. But unfortunately, I guess it doesn't look like they're doing it well. And maybe now with a, you know, I'm sure every time they bring in a new director of officiating, I'm sure they ask him questions on what he thinks, you know, should be the determining factor on some key penalties. Because, you know, you guys are right. Like, you know, there are some penalties that really turn a game around. You know,
mm-hmm.
especially the flagrant fouls. You know, where you're talking a 15-yard penalty. You know, you're going from, you know, regular plays to red zone sometimes, you know, and then maybe one play into the end zone as opposed to two first downs to get into the end zone, you know, maybe a field goal, and now all of a sudden a touchdown is a reality, which could be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mike, tell it, you wanted to talk about this. What do you have to say about it?
Manasseh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, yeah. No.
Yeah, I've been calling you Manasseh so much, I've forgotten to use it.
Yeah. No, that's you guys are all right, you know. And the thing is, it's so subjective with these, especially when it comes to hitting the quarterback. Like, I remember a game where, between the Riders and Stamps, where Terrius George basically headbutted Drew Tate, takes him out. The guy basically has a concussion. There was no call in the play. And then the very next drive, Durant has the ball, and the defender didn't even hit him. He just swiped, and his hand made contact with Durant's head, and they call a 15-yard, penalty on that. And I just, you know, it's the inconsistency that just drives, I think, all fans crazy. Because as long as they call it consistently, whether good or bad, we're okay with it. But it's just this up and down, you know.
Well, that's what makes the
flow of the game.
That's what makes the officials noticeable, and that's what fans don't like. And as I said, if they're not consistent, that makes them very noticeable because, you know, a red flag goes up in your head, and just by your description there, that would make me, doesn't matter which team I'm rooting for, that would make me nervous, and it would make me notice, and that's not a good thing. So where do you see, Mike, the director of officiating, working on, what do you see as the obvious problems with officiating? You know, you've mentioned before conspiracy and that kind of stuff. I've talked about the fact that that's just incompetence. Regardless of what's the reason, what does he do to eliminate my definition of some of their work as being incompetent, or yours as in looking like it's, you know, kind of showing favoritism? How do they eliminate both those issues? Because I'm sure it's the one move that'll do it. How do they become more consistent? Because really that's the key.
Yep.
Do they pay these officials more? You know, I'm of the opinion that some of the money that this money that gets distributed, everybody's talking about how the players want more money and how, you know, we have our commissioner talking about we need to use that money to build the league better. I would suggest that I think you could put a third thing in there, is that money should be going to the officiating, whether it's training or offering a bigger payday so that you bring in people who are actually, you know, better than what they have already. How do you guys feel about that? Starting with you, Deb.
I think I agree with you. Maybe we pay them a bit more, and they're all taught the same thing. Like, they've all learned what their jobs are out there. Maybe we pay them a bit more to become more consistent. And maybe if they're not consistent, maybe they get punted. I don't know.
Well, you know, if they're paying more money, I mean, it opens up the amount of people that, you know, that may be better but just don't feel it's worth it, you know, to be a referee.
Yeah.
What is the salary of a CFL referee? Does anybody know?
Yeah, it's not even really a salary. It's kind of like they get a couple hundred dollars and then they get, like, free gear, and that's pretty much it.
Well, that explains a whole lot.
Yeah, so do.
But, I mean, you know, like, even in the NFL, the referees get paid really well, and even though they do it full-time and they get all the great training, even they make blatant mistakes all the time.
Well,
and,
we just saw one this weekend.
I'll go as far
we
as to
say
sometimes.
We just saw one this weekend.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I don't see as many mistakes in the CFL as I see in the NFL. In the NFL, I see just, like, over the top. And it's so, like, in a game, you'll see, like, five huge mistakes by the refs consistently in the NFL. In the CFL, I don't think it's as much, you know, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And those guys get paid, like 70, 80 grand, I think, a piece. So, you know.
Well, the nice thing, we pay our refs a lot more than to earn what they're making and call the game the way it should be. Be consistent.
Yeah, be consistent. I think a little bit more training and, you know, a couple extra bucks. I mean, you know, it can get better. But, you know, if you need to put some training videos out there, then so do it. I mean, it's not a big problem. It hasn't been really bad, but it just... calm down on the roughing the passer calls. That's what they need to do. The roughing the passer calls need to be calmed down on. That's all. Don't make so many of them. But if the passers, the quarterbacks do get hit hard, make the call. I'm not saying don't make the call, but you're going to have to use your judgment on which is a roughing the passer call and which one is just a straightforward motion. That's all.
But speaking of the new CBA, what are you guys' thoughts on these the latest rumors that it looks like the players might be going into a strike over this one because there's a lot more money on the line?
Well, absolutely,
oh,
they're going to threaten to go on strike. It'd be stupid not to, don't you think?
So do you think next year might be in jeopardy at all, or what do you?
No. What I do think is that I think Kohan's a little too smart to be that obstinate and say, no, you guys aren't getting anything. And I don't think the players are that obstinate that they're going to ask for more than they have a right to ask for. But I do believe that they're going to play the game, right? And the game is the CFL players have to say, listen, we'll strike. Do Kohan and Copeland think that it's a good idea to have them go on strike? The threat's going to be there. I don't doubt that the threat's going to be there, but I don't think it's this is not that much money that these guys need to threaten the growth that's been created in the league. The momentum that they've got going here in the last few years. What do you guys think?
I think with the players, with the players I'm concerned about. I think what they did, really, I think they all set back and watch this Chris Williams deal that happened this past season while he opted out his contract for the money that he signed for, saying that he wasn't going to play, he wasn't going to get himself hurt for, what, $45,000,
$50,000? Right.
And then he opted out his deal and ended up signing for, a couple of hundred thousand over here in NFL. So a lot of players watch how that transpired. So, and they also watching the numbers that the CFL is generating for its dollars. It's not like the CFL is losing money. They are making money. So they're like, hey, look, if we're going to sit out here and play 18 games plus playoff, plus preseason, and put our bodies on the line, and I'm playing for $50,000, $60,000, hey, man, you know, you can up my contract, and I can play for $90,000 or $100,000. I mean, we are here making the money for you guys, so why not pay us?
But, you know, you have to remember the commissioner does work. He works for the owners. Like, the owners actually hire him. And this TV deal was something that a lot of the owners are waiting on. And it's, you know, one of the reasons why in Ottawa and in Winnipeg and in Saskatchewan, you've seen them contribute so much to their stadium deals because they were expecting to get a consistent, you know, growth in revenue, especially from this deal. So I think the owners are going to give, you know, the commissioner a really hard-line mandate to not let the players get more than a $500,000 increase on the cap. and maybe a slight increase on the percentage of royalties from they get from merchandise sales. And the players are asking for like 50% on merchandise sales and at least $1 million increase on the cap, including additional, you know, more revenue going into players' pensions and health insurance and all this other stuff. So I don't know. I think this is going to get pretty ugly. And I'm just worried for Ottawa because I think it would be terrible in their first year to have the league have to miss games or any kind of, you know, strike go down. I think it would be a really black eye for Ottawa.
Yeah, it really would. And I agree with your whole 100% when I say it'd be a black eye on the league and bad for Ottawa. I mean, you can't beat no expansion team coming in right after during a strike. You know, that's bad.
Right.
That's real bad. But I think – and I also think with the new deal that's going to come up with NBC Sports Network, and plus the deal that Mark Cohen is about to get with ESPN, it's going to be a lot of money thrown at the CFL just for them two signings alone, them two TV deals alone. I mean, ESPN and NBC Network, that's going to be a lot of money thrown at the CFL. Well, it's not going to be that much, but it's going to be more when you combine it with them two TV deals. You see what I'm saying?
It's going to be like $150,000 a piece. Like, that's about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's
but the point isn't,
like,
you know,
yeah.
Mike, the point, I mean, I say the point isn't how much it is. At the end of the day, I mean, when I say it doesn't matter how much it is, these guys have to understand that, and I think what Mike's trying to say is that they can't be screwing this around right now because they got, it's like when you're going on a first date. You don't want him to see your parents right away. You know, doesn't want to hear the hassle about the hassle. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You want to get out there for a few dates first, show what you can do and who you are, whether it be male or female, and not be impacted by the players, if you will. You know what I mean? And by players,
right.
I mean the owners, the referees, all that other stuff. You want to be in you want to be wearing your best suit, you know, your best pair of shoes. You don't need any crap right now because they're on the cusp of something. It's not about the $150,000 those guys are going to pay. It's what they might pay in the future if things look good. You know, they're being considered now as, you know, programming for their station.
That's why the CFL tried so hard to get Tim Tebow. I don't know if people knew, but behind the scenes, not only were
they tried
certain
bad,
teams,
man.
But the league itself put together an offer to try to get him to come to the CFL because they knew if they had him, oh my God, ESPN and NBC Sports Network would have came in with just, they would have backed the Brinks truck right into the CFL office and just dropped off a couple million to get that, because that would have been huge demand in the States if he came up here. But he said no, and they were offering him like a $1.5 million a year too, and he still said no. I was pretty blown away by that.
Yeah, he actually, and he got offered a contract with the LA Kiss, Gene Simmons Arena Football Team. They offered him $1.5 million for 3 years to come play in the Arena Football League, and he turned it down.
Yep.
He turned down a lot of money. I guess Tim Tebow feels that he's an NFL quarterback, which, I mean, you know, I already said before.
You haven't heard? He got offered $200,000 by an Italian league team.
What about the guy
wow.
in Russia? The one he went to Russia and played 2 days. He had a two-day contract, and it was worth more than $1 million for 2 days. He went there, played one game, did a bunch of publicity stuff, and was done, and they gave him $1 million.
Wow.
Well, that's at the root of what we're talking about, and that was the motivation I had for mentioning that the CFL needs to keep their nose clean right now because they got some pretty good suitors out there.
Yeah, and you know what? Really, as far as that Tim Tebow thing go, We don't know what Ottawa might have in the plans. We don't know what they're doing behind closed doors to try to get them to come up there.
That would be crazy, man. If they pulled, if they came up with Tebow, oh my God, that would be insane.
Wow, because y'all know Jeff Hunt got a way of making things work,
right?
And you know, he's interested in bringing some attention to the team,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
if you want to have a sellout home game, Tim Tebow is the man to bring in because that would be the number one selling jersey in Ottawa and probably in the whole CFL. Ottawa going to be on TV a lot.
especially if Tebow's there. I mean, it'd be a win-win situation for Ottawa, the CFL, and Tim Tebow.
And you also think about the fact that the Alouettes, Montreal, right now has Tebow's right on the negotiation list, right? And the GM for Ottawa was Marcel, was an assistant to Jim Pop for all those years. So if anybody were to hook him up and just give him the deal on that, it'd be him.
And the reason would be that really, technically speaking, Timbo wouldn't be a threat in as far as, you know, a game day threat. He would be more of a post-game and pre-game threat.
I think Timbo would absolutely ball out in the CFL, man. The CFL is made for the guy. Yeah, I mean, you look at guys like Justin Goltz and, you know, even take the guy in Hamilton, Lefevre, right? You saw what he was doing, right? Big guy, mobile, because of his size, he was able to bounce off hits and make plays with the run and use that option play. With Tebow, it would be all day. I mean, who's going to tackle the guy? He's bigger than most linebackers and defensive linemen in the CFL. I mean, he would be running that option play all game long. It'd be nonstop. And he would just challenge any defense in the league to keep him from rushing for 150, 200 yards a game.
Yep. As a quarterback.
Right.
As a quarterback. And then plus, you know, they would run the style of play for him that suits his strengths.
Right.
Instead of trying
like
to do
like he did
something.
In Florida. Right.
Mm-hmm. Like he did in Florida.
Yeah. He just needs to be in the shotgun and be able to do that zone read. If you give him that look all game long, man, and then with the wide field giving him that angle every time, come on. CFL defense would be having nightmares trying to figure out how to stop that option play.
Right, because it's not like that Tebow does not have a strong arm. He was just a little bit inaccurate. That's all. Just a little bit inaccurate. And that's the reason
little
he was
bit.
In Denver. Right. But you know what? I give Tebow the long bombs. But the short passes, he was really inaccurate. But the long passes, the 20, 25-yard passes, he was pretty good. The dump passes were really hurting. That was the one that was inaccurate. But like he was played in Denver. When he was a start in Denver, Denver made the offense that made Tim Tebow his strengths. That's the reason why they went on that win streak and went to the playoffs.
Right.
You got to put an offensive scheme in that's going to be the strength of your quarterback. And playing in the CFL, Tim Tebow will have 100, 200 rushing yards in the game, knocking them little corners over, man, like bowling pins.
Beautiful. We got another caller, guys. Let me bring in this caller. And we have Aaron William Freeland next. Hello, caller. Where are you calling from and who are you?
Alaska.
Cool.
Wow.
Lonzo, what's up?
What's up?
Oh, you know
man,
this guy, Mike.
How you doing? Yeah, I know Lonzo.
Okay, we also have Aaron in. Aaron, say hello.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey, okay, what's up, Aaron, you're. I didn't realize you'd sent me that message. Aaron texted me on Facebook to tell me he wanted me to call him, and I ignored him unintentionally. So, Aaron, you wanted to pipe up on. I see you wanted to pipe up on our buddy Tim Tebow.
I'm not 100% convinced that he would be good. I watched him play when he was with the Gators. I wasn't that impressed. Even less impressed when I saw him in the NFL. The CFL is a league where primarily you're going to have to try to air it out if you want to advance down the field quickly. He's great when he's running, don't get me wrong, but in the CFL you have to be able to throw the ball. And you mentioned it yourself, Tebow's inaccurate. I don't think he'd survive. I think he'd get eaten alive. I'd love to see it happen, but I just don't think he'd be a fit.
Alaska, you're next. What's your opinion?
Tim Tebow's good, though, but I think if he play a different position, I mean, if he play like a fullback, I mean, he'll be more effective in the quarterback position. That's my opinion.
Wow.
I may be wrong about it, but, I mean, he's more effective running than throwing the ball, as you guys say. He can't throw long balls, but he can throw short balls. So, I mean, if I was a coach, I'd put Tim Tebow as a fullback. He could run over people, and plus he's effective when he's running the ball. So I'll put him in the fullback position.
Isn't that what they tried to do in New England?
Ooh.
I think they tried to put him like in the shotgun situations or something like that, like the Wildcat. That's what it was called, the Wildcat.
Like the Wildcat, yeah, like how the Jets did.
And it wasn't a success, but you know, his desire to play, his willingness to pay attention to what the coaches told him. He came out of New England as if to say, Purcell made it sound like, we could bring him back. So, like, he didn't burn his bridge. So we know that he's a likable kind of guy as far as the team concept is concerned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a likable guy. And, I mean, he's a perfect teammate. But the odds were stacked against him when he got drafted. I mean, he was a work in progress, first of all. And Tim Tebow was a famous guy in Florida. And when he came to the NFL, his jersey was the number one selling jersey his rookie year. So everybody knew that Tim Tebow was going to be a work in progress. Denver did not expect Tim Tebow to even play that year. I think when they benched, I forgot who the quarterback was, Brady Quinn, I think that's his name. And
right.
Tim Tebow went out there and played. They weren't expecting that, but then when he started winning, they built their offense around him for his strengths. And then when they had to get Peyton Manning, I mean, come on, I mean.
No, but you can't compare those two guys. I love Tim Tebow too, but you know you're comparing a guy who isn't really a quarterback's quarterback to a guy who's Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, but
right.
Tebow
so,
have more
you know,
playoff wins with the Broncos than Manning.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. But see, I mean, you know, you bring it in Peyton Manning, look at the pedigree. You know, so you're gonna, okay, Tim Tebow, I like you, but you know, I'm sorry, but I got to trade you off.
And he would have been too much of a distraction if he stayed in Denver.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I agree.
And then went to the Jets. I mean. And the only reason that didn't work out because they didn't make an offense. They didn't put an offensive scheme in the plans that suits Tim Tebow. They didn't put an offensive scheme that suits his playing style. Their offensive scheme was to show the strengths of Mark Sanchez, not Tim Tebow.
It almost, you know, that New York Jet experience almost looked to me like it was one of those situations where the GM brought a guy in the coach didn't want.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because
part of it was,
Ryan,
you know,
quarterback.
Like, yeah, like Rex Ryan was still kind of ticked off how the year before in Denver, if y'all remember, Tebow beat him on that Thursday night game, and I think it was in overtime, and he ran that touchdown in to win the game. So you knew he wasn't about trying to have this guy, you know, support him after he beat him the way he did.
There you go.
No, he didn't. He wasn't. And then when you go to New England, I mean, Tom Brady, and then you got Ryan Mallett that's just waiting in the wings for Brady to retire. That's going to probably be your future starter. It wasn't enough room in New England for Tim Tebow. They brought him in, see what he can do, and, you know, that was it. Basically put him on the roster, see what he can do.
And he wasn't ready for prime time.
Nope. I mean, not in New England. I mean, if Jacksonville was smart,
I mean,
they would at least sign him.
In prime time, yeah. Well, in New England prime time is different than Jacksonville prime time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a whole different
at least
scale,
in Jacksonville,
right?
Yeah, at least in Jacksonville, he would they would have sold out instead of having empty seats.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, he has to go to a team that's going to be patient enough to let him learn his craft because he's not finished learning. Because he could rely on his legs so much.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go please.
Yeah, go
feel
ahead,
free
Dan.
To. I'm just reading that Tim Tebow, this came up today, was offered a contract by Italy, Milano Siemens.
$200,000.
Yeah. A 4-month
wow.
contract.
And, you know, but like, it like, and like David said, he got offered a contract. A lot of people are throwing contracts at Tim Tebow, CFL, NFL, Italian leagues, Russian leagues, arena leagues. Tim Tebow is just trying to figure out which way he's going to go. He's just there trying to get that hatred of being let go from the NFL. And once
you know,
he clears his head of that, he'd be out there playing.
let's be honest, guys. I'm Canadian, and I love the Canadian Football League, but we're talking about an American kid who spent his whole life dreaming about playing football, and if you're going to dream about playing football, you're dreaming about playing in the NFL. And if you leave believing that you still got it and you could make it, and you're not being given the chance, I agree with you. That would be, lead to a lot of anger on his part. But really, he has to somehow figure out a place where someone can be patient for him to pick up his craft, you know. I'm not saying that they got to have him for 5 years to learn. You know, we're not talking about 5 years, but we are talking about a progression from where he is now to where he could be an NFL quarterback first and Tim Tebow second.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
Hey, if you want to, it really does. It really does. And if you want to play, yeah, I know he had dreams and want to play in the NFL. But, hey, if you want to play some football, man, you just got to get out there. You know, CFL, arena, indoor leagues, if you got to play in order for somebody to even want to try to see if they want to bring you in anyway. You just cannot sit at home, work out every day, and not
that
show
ain't
your
enough.
Skills.
That ain't enough.
That's not enough.
And, you know, Manasseh will be the first one to tell you that just because you're a quarterback in the CFL doesn't mean it's the end of your career in the NFL. There have been a couple of really good quarterbacks who've made it to the NFL after being in the CFL. It doesn't just go one way. Obviously, more quarterbacks come to the CFL leaving the NFL. But there have been enough to make it believable that coming to the CFL could lead back to the NFL if you can master the part of the game the NFL wants.
Yeah. I agree on that.
But he's running out of chances. I mean, this next draft has got at least four, if not five, legit quarterbacks that could really be starters next year. And, I mean, he's going to run out of options soon. So I think he's going to have to make up his mind on what he's actually going to do. You know, he could have used this last year playing in the CFL or in the Arena Football League and, you know, showed guys, hey, he worked on his game and he improved his accuracy and boom. I mean, that was an opportunity, but I don't know, man. Maybe the guy's got pride or something. I don't know.
Maybe he's getting the wrong advice. Go ahead. Repeat that. I'm sorry. I talked over you.
No, I'm sorry. I was saying it got to do with a lot of pride issues and people all in his ear telling him, you know, stay in the NFL. You're going to make it. Stay in the NFL. NFL, NFL. Man, look, you come to the CFL, make you some jack, show them that you know how to play, and you can go back down south. If not,
right. Yeah, you know,
get up there, make $300,000 to $400,000 a year, pocket it, and go about your business.
Well, I'm inclined to agree. Go ahead, Alaska. Go ahead.
I'm honest. I'm gonna be honest. If somebody offering the contest to play in CFL, I don't care. I'll play. Shoot, forget the pride. I mean, you're still playing football. It's not like your whole career ended. I mean, it's a little setback. From playing for the NFL, it's in Tebow situation, but I mean, if you gotta play CFL to get a little bit better and get better at your craft, why not do it? I mean, a lot of people kill even playing in a Euro league and all that. So that was me. I play. So I don't care where I play. As long as I'm playing football, as long as I got a chance to improve on my craft and all that, I'm good to go. That's my opinion.
The problem, maybe, you know, I think Mike has a very valid point, and the problem may be the guys that are in his ear. And the guys that are in his ear are looking for the short-term solution and not looking long-term. And again, I repeat, when I say long-term, I'm not talking 5 years. I'm talking a couple of years where he goes in, and I can take Mike's opinion and join it with Manasseh's and say this, because I see what you guys are saying, and I'm kind of getting a little bit convinced. It would be great because, as we've talked before, there's been deals that seem questionable in sports and in the CFL in particular, where it seems almost like they're trying to help a team. Well, you know what? How far from truth would it be if, let's say, NBC and ESPN said, hey, look, we'll give you $150,000 for what you're doing right now, but if you find somebody to bring in Tim Tebow and those kinds of players, bring guys into the league that, you know, that are recognizable in the U.S., it may be worth more money to you, and anything that you, you know, generate, you know, more than whatever that is, we'll give you. But, you know, or if you bring in Tim Tebow, we'll add another $500,000 to our contract, and we'll pay his contract. Just bring him in. Maybe that's what they should be looking at, you know,
yeah.
Offset the cost. And every team's entitled to a, a star player, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And the CFL has a perfect spot waiting for him, too, in Winnipeg. I mean, think about it. You put him in Winnipeg, they got a beautiful new stadium, great fans. They got a huge hole at quarterback. I mean, it's like a perfect fit just waiting to happen.
And a division that's really tough that needs a bit of a goose for that team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same with Hamilton. Just imagine Tim Tebow and Kent Austin and Tim Horton's new field stadium. Come on, man. You know, Bob Young will have to dish out the money, but I'm pretty sure you get Tim Tebow to come to Hamilton, I'm pretty sure he'll pay that contract with no problems.
Yeah, but I'm saying that it would be in the best interest of ESPN and NBC to have a name like Tebow show up, you know, because he's an asset. His name is still hot, and they could work a deal with Tim Tebow, you know, and they could even use him to promote. You know, they don't have to pay him as far as being a player is concerned. He could do commercials and get paid on the side so that it doesn't get involved in the budget of a team and the cap, you know. They work out a deal.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think – I'll tell you right now, I like to think that I can put myself in people's shoes. If I was a CFL player and somebody said to me they want to bring Tim Tebow in here and we think that he's going to raise the perspective of – the profile of the CFL to the extent, you know, we believe it's going to do that, and then the Players Association, and they work out some sort of deal that is mutually beneficial to everybody, because the biggest problem with bringing in a Tim Tebow is that he's going to cost a lot of money, and you know, the budgets in the CFL aren't made for a guy like Tim Tebow. We sit there and talk, and Manasseh, you've said it a million times, oh my God, they're paying this guy $250,000. You know, and that's a monumental amount of money. You know, they're paying a quarterback like Ray, I think, what, $400,000 or something like that? That's
right.
A lot of money. But Tim Tebow could ask for a lot more than that, and it would almost burst the seams of the budget. It'd end up being like he ended up making half of what the cap is for a team. And that'd be way too much. Go ahead.
I tell you what, with the jersey sales alone of what Tim he plays in, shoot, that'd pay his salary itself.
Right.
You know? And if they were to get Tim Tebow in the CFL, you're going to get a contract from the NBC Network. You're going to get one from ESPN. And don't be surprised if the NFL Network will be trying to pitch in too to get a couple of games that for the team that he's playing on. So you have three nice lucrative deals that could come about if you get him in the league.
I actually disagree, Mike, with that theory for only one reason. I believe that bringing Tim Tebow in here, and if it worked out with a guy like Tim Tebow, there'd be other high-profile quarterbacks who might not be happy with the way they're being treated in the NFL that might begin to come to the CFL. So I don't think the NFL would promote that too much, because not that they'd be ever competing with the CFL, but the appearance of better players leaving the CFL or leaving the NFL for the CFL is not something the NFL wants to do. They love their domination, you know, relationship with other sports. They dominate the other sports. They don't just attract more people and make a lot more money. People talk about them more, are more interested in them, you know. I don't know. That'd be the slim edge of the wedge, in my opinion, because that would create a lot of interest that the NFL may not want to give to the CFL.
Yeah,
but
timing,
you know,
is perfect, too. Right.
Yep, that's what I was about to say. The timing is perfect. And right now, a lot of the quarterbacks that's in the NFL, they're assigned to the contract, especially the second stringers. You're not going to really too much worry about the third stringers and the practice roster guys to bring over to the CFL, because a lot of the CFL teams already got their guys.
Right.
So, you know, they're not going to be looking to sign no more NFL quarterbacks that's looking to just come over there and play, because you know they come over there and play, and then if they don't pan out, then only thing they're going to do is go back south, because a lot of NFL quarterbacks cannot throw on that big field. There's only a few that can come to the CFL and actually make it.
Well, it was a long time. It was a very long
practice.
Go ahead, Mike.
Off season practice. No, I said there's only a few that can come up to the CFL and be successful with off-season practice and OTAs to get acclimated in the CFL.
Well, you guys are right.
Come up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys are right with the names, because the CFL heyday was when The players were actually they were competing. The CFL was competing with contracts to guys like Joe Theismann. Joe Theismann decided to come to Canada because he was being offered more money than he was in the NFL. And if the profile of the CFL rises to a level, you know, let's say next year things start to work out where their value rises, let's say by 25%. That's a pretty good wave to ride on for a while, you know, and a guy like Tim Tebow could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And with the CFL already having experienced and experimented with the U.S. Expansion, I don't think they'll do it. They could really create an image of this league that would be attractive to American football fans because it would be different and it wouldn't be comparable to any of the, U.S. leagues that are out there. It's nothing like, you know, indoor football. Indoor football, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like the NFL. I mean, the closest thing it is to college football, but I wouldn't even insult college football fans into suggesting that the CFL would rank with them in any way because I don't even think some NFL teams rank with some college football teams, in my opinion. So there's a niche there for the CFL, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
one thing
there's
I
one
will say.
Go ahead,
Manasseh. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying another guy out there that's a former NFL quarterback that could come up this year is Vince Young. I've been actually hearing a couple rumors about him potentially getting a couple tryouts in Winnipeg and even in Hamilton. So we'll see. It'd be nice to see him come up too.
So is he a free agent?
He's been trying to get a backup job in the NFL for about a year and a half now, and doesn't look like any teams are going to do it. So by the time the next season kicks off, he may be able to make that move and decide to come up north, you know, seeing how Troy Smith is starting to get some success and get established. So he might see that and think, hey, let me come up here and try to prove see what I can do too.
Let's get to know
Vince
a little bit.
He was on Montreal's radar
negotiation list. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
They sure do. That Pop sure does know which quarterbacks could spring loose that are very effective and have a lot of potential, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska, introduce yourself to our group and to the people listening in. You're new. Tell us a bit about yourself. It sounds like you played football. Tell me your name again. I'm sorry I didn't quite make it out. The sound is not 100% great.
My name is Alonzo Phillips. I'm from Brooklyn, New York, but I came to Alaska from the military, got out, started playing football for the Alaska Football League, played this year for the Richardson Redskins, lost in the championship game, and then right now I'm trying to play in the new league called National Spring Football League. So I was invited to go to camp around like February 3rd. There's two teams that's interested in me right now, but I'm not sure. So right now I'm just kind of like in a tight bind right now. I don't know which one to pick, Arizona or Cali. I don't know. I know both of those nice places, but I just got to do some research and figure it out and all that. But other than that, I just like play football, and that's about it.
So then it's a league that plays in the Western United States. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, you can say that most likely. They got teams in Arizona, Boston.
Oh, okay,
Los Angeles.
So it's national.
It's national, yeah.
It's like called the National Spring Football League, Frank.
Football League. It's supposed to be like the NFL development league for the NFL, just like how the NBA has the NBDL league. Like,
yep.
That's how the league's going to be.
And it sounds like it's on the same schedule as the CFL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because our league's basically spring, early summer league. Summer league.
Yeah.
Summer and fall.
Yep.
Well, that's cool. Sounds good. Wish you a lot of luck. Mm-hmm. I hope it works out for you. So you're playing football in Alaska. What kind of league is in Alaska? Because you're going to find out why I'm leading you down a garden path.
Alaska Football League. That's the only league that's there now. It was Alaska Wild, but they shut down the operations because, like, the budgeting and all that. So they shut down their league. So now they got, like, Alaska Football League. Now they're being a lot of teams now. Another team called Matsu Valley. That's in the north side, like going towards the north side, like Alaska. So you got the Alaska Football League. It's straight though. It's a nice little league. It's basically kind of like that you play for the league, and it's kind of like building your resume though to go somewhere else big. So it's a good league.
No, the reason I ask is because before Mike was around, maybe. I don't know if Mike was around for this. I know Manasseh was around for this. I don't remember who started the conversation. We were starting to talk about expansion in the Canadian Football League after Ottawa and how many teams we could have in the CFL. And it came down to the point that what other team in the West could be put in other than Winnipeg after this year? We really couldn't come up with a city that other than tapping into splitting Saskatchewan's interest and maybe putting a team in Saskatoon. You remember the conversation, Manasseh, and we started talking about what about a Canadian Football League team? Are you ready for this in Alaska?
Yeah, I was in that conversation, Frank. I remember.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we were talking about it. A CFL team going there. Is football that popular in Alaska? I know it's American, but, you know, it is separated. It is not part of the mainland, right?
It's popular to a certain extent, but it's not like – it got good talent, though. But, I mean, if you really want to make it big, you got to, like, kind of, like, get out of that comfort zone and go somewhere else and expand your horizons besides Alaska. It got good people who can play football, but it's like Alaska is not like Gold 48 where you play all year round. Like Alaska, you play like about 3 months out of the year, so you start mid-season like August, and the season ends like in October, but you got the championships in October. So you only got like a good 3 months of play time within Alaska, and a lot of people who play, most of them don't really work out like how people work out in the full 48s. It's like, okay, they train for like 3 months. After that, they just go back to their regular schedule and all that. Go back to partying and doing what they do before they start playing football. It's not taking it seriously.
Or they work. Which gets in the way. Which gets in the way of training.
Yes.
All right. Well, it's good to get to meet you, and thank you for calling us. We really appreciate the fact that you're a new caller, and that's always nice. So here we are. Let's take a short break. We'll come back in a bit, and we haven't talked about Campbell being hired by the Red Blacks, and our Red Black fans will want us to talk about them. So why don't we take a short break, and we'll come back and talk about. Finally, the Red Blacks make a coaching announcement.
There's an unwritten code in Hamilton. If you live by it, chances are you've replaced the last beer in a cooler. You don't talk during the national anthem. You believe that great things can come from a little room above a fruit stand. You know Mac is a university, not a computer. Your child's first words were Oski Wee Wee. You know a red hat looks good with black and gold, and understand that double blue only looks good on the police. You believe hot water isn't a necessity for the visitor's dressing room. You've hit every green light on Main Street twice. You believe there's a little general in all of us. You only wear your good hard hat to games. You know King Kong was more than an ape, he was a five-time All-Star. You've parked on somebody's lawn to catch a kickoff. You know that Porter is a quarterback, not a bellhop. You've worn a kilt to a football game. You understand that every once in a while you have to be the center. You believe a football team can outlast 22 prime ministers, 2 world wars, a great depression, and still give birth to a pearl. You've worn a garbage bag as a raincoat. You've never seen a fair catch. You pick a concession line not based on how long the line is, but how hot that cashier looks. You understand that Labor Day is more than an extra day off. And no matter what happens on the field, your season is a success if you beat the Argos.
Now Well, I hope temporarily, but it appears we've lost a couple of our listeners. Yeah, Aaron's gone. Aaron, just let me know if you want back in or if you become busy so that you can't spend time with us beyond where you just did. In other words, if you left voluntarily, I understand. But if you didn't, we'll give you a call back and get you back in here. Okay, so as promised, we got Campbell now. Huey Campbell's son is now the head coach in Ottawa. The Red Blacks' first season. Young guy, a lot of experience. He's not short on experience. Is he, Mike? Or Manasse? Apparently...
Manasse still there?
I don't know. Yeah, it sounded like he was, but no, he's not there anymore. Now he's gone too. All right, go ahead, Mike.
Well,
he'll be
calling back.
Give us.
You know what? I really don't have too much knowledge on him. Where did he come from? He come from Calgary, right?
That's right. He was their defensive coordinator.
Okay. Yeah, I know who you're talking about now. Yeah, you know what? Like I said earlier, with the, a lot of coaches and not being available. He picked the next best coach. I mean, because look at the success Calgary had the last couple of years. I mean, they were, what, one game away of going to the Grey Cup this year and was in the Grey Cup year before? I mean,
yeah. You
know, the defense that they had in Calgary was pretty good. I mean, Ben don't break, but they played really good. And, I mean, right now, the defensive coordinators is what's getting the jobs done as far as getting a head coaching job. They're looking for all these defensive coordinators that can bring that pedigree defense to them certain teams. So coming in as a head coach and also being a defensive coordinator actually is not a bad deal because you can implement your own defensive scheme with your defensive coordinator, put your heads together, and then you have – being the head coach, I mean, hey, it's not a bad signing. I wish him well.
How about you, Debbie, from your perspective?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part. I was still coming back.
No worries. What we're saying is we've got Campbell, a young quarterback. Huey Campbell was, he's a legend in Edmonton. And now his son is in red-black territory. And he'll be playing in our division, which is the Argos in Hamilton. And we're just wondering what you think is – what do you think of a young guy and a defensive coordinator might do in the Red Blacks, black and red?
Well, honestly, I don't even know this person. Sorry, I'm green.
Well, it doesn't matter. Does it hurt that you don't know him from your perspective? How often are you surprised? And maybe you don't even really care about, I don't want to say care, but maybe you know, you're more interested in or you gravitate towards the game itself and how it's played.
Yes.
All right. Well,
I do.
Having
this program so I learn more.
Okay. Well, let me put it this way then. I can ask you in a way that you can answer, and I hope. And I believe the question would be, if it's somebody you don't know coaching for a new team like the Red Blacks, do you see that as a possible good move, or does it work against maybe it should be somebody that even you should recognize for, you know, a first coach in a place like, you know, Ottawa that's trying to build back up again, you know, that following in Ottawa?
Well, my personal take on that would be, since it's a new team, it should be someone I know.
Yeah. It's not hard to believe.
Maybe I'm looking through rose-colored glasses, but...
No.
Since you're new and starting fresh, you want to hear a name that you all have already heard.
So that you can immediately relate to the team.
Right, and you feel that it's someone that will make an impact to the team.
And that's important. And that's important. Alaska, what do you think?
I would want a coach that I know too. But I mean, he probably could do some good too. He probably, even though you don't know him, he probably got like a good background. Probably got good more character. Or he probably got like one of them coaches that got a lot of intensity and know how to get his players ready for the game. So It's probably you might find that out when you see him coach and all that, but that's what I think. But in my opinion, I would want a coach that knows experience, but he probably just looking for a shot like every other coach in the world. Like, let me get a chance to coach and see how well I do and get some experience. So he's probably trying to get a shot just like everybody else.
Beautiful.
Can I add something to this, Frank?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like Mike O'Shea, Campbell is going to surround himself with veteran people in Ottawa. He's going to get him a veteran offensive coordinator, and he's going to get him a veteran defensive coordinator, somebody that has pedigree in the CFL. So when you surround yourself with the supporting cast, then it's not going to be so hard for you to make that transition from that defensive coordinator to that head coach.
Absolutely, agreed. Another new listener in the room. Who's in here with us?
Hey, Derek.
Hey, Derek. Oh, okay.
You guys hear me?
Yep, we can
hear
you.
Hey, I would say, like, it depends. Do you guys want to win games or do you guys want to sell tickets?
Yeah, you see, isn't that the tough thing to do with your first coach?
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, are you trying to sell tickets or are you trying to win games? If you win games, you're going to sell tickets, right? You want to win games, right? I heard what Debbie was saying, and it's like, you know, I can appreciate that. It's like, you know, that'll sell you some tickets right away, but you want to win games, you win games, you'll have tickets sold.
Yeah, you know, Derek, I think what sells tickets more than anything is winning.
Of course.
Right? And that's what, in my opinion, sells tickets. And also, it's not just about winning, but it's being consistently entertaining. You know, these teams, this is where I guess, since Mike brought up the case of Campbell and O'Shea being on a sort of parallel track, the problem with that is that how patient are the ticket buyers going to be with a guy that isn't experienced if he runs into a little bit of trouble, and because he runs into a little trouble, management has him on a short leash, you know? In sports, we've seen that many times where inexperienced guys get buried by the ones that are experienced. Not every time.
Well, I guess,
you know,
like that depends on like how, like what management style is, right? Like, I think right now in Winnipeg, we've got upper management style that's probably going to be a little more patient. They know that somebody like O'Shea going in, not necessarily to expect 100%, you know, like winning right away. And there might be a learning curve. But they're surrounding him with a lot of guys that know the game very well, and he might have more of a leash as a result of that, right?
Yeah, and Winnipeg, by virtue of the division they're going in, will have to build a deeper foundation than, let's say, Hamilton did to achieve the same kind of success.
What are you saying? The East is weak or what?
What's that?
It's in the East is weak. He's in the East is weak or what?
Well, that's what I get told every week when I do this show, and I love the East.
You know, I think
but
the East is not weak.
The East teams are built to play the East teams. And as far as Campbell goes in Ottawa, their expectations is to win some games, but he don't have no pressure on his being a first-year head coach. They're going to give him some time. And, you know, if Jeff Hunt's going to open a pocketbook, believe me, the players are going to come. It's not going to take Ottawa a long time to get a good team. Now, this is the CFL. We ain't talking about NFL teams.
But to try to understand the point. Go ahead, Derek.
Well, like you look at Kansas City this year, I mean, they're a pretty good example. I mean, they had a terrible team last year, even in the NFL. Like, it's, you know, you get a few small changes, you know, one key change here and there, and it's you can have immediate turnarounds, right? I don't think the Bombers are that far out of it. They're just, you know, it was like a ship without a sail, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's true. And the tough part is the biggest, you know, what was it that Yogi Berra said? You know, success is 50% talent and 90% drive, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, confidence. So, you know, it
yeah,
is. it is what it is. And to support your point, and I guess to take Mike's opinion and ask this question, would it be fair to say that Campbell will be under a lot less pressure than O'Shea by virtue of the division competition level? Even though I don't, Derek, I didn't hear you. Do you agree or disagree that the East is a weaker division than the West?
I would say marginally. I would say the East has been traditionally worse, but I think they pulled up their socks this year, and I think that's why Winnipeg looked. I think that's why the Bombers look so bad. I think the Bombers didn't really get that much worse. I think Toronto played. I thought Toronto was the best team in the league all year. I think Hamilton got better through the year. They were tied with the Bombers as the worst team in the league the year before. They got consistently better. Montreal had some hiccups with losing Calvillo and losing coach, what's the name, Pressman. You know, I think the team, you know, they had to, you know, those are things that were going to happen anyways, but, you know, they both kind of happened at one time, and the beginning of the season for Montreal was a bit of a disaster, and it was going to happen at one time or another, but it just happened this year, right? And yeah. I think, you know, they started to get their stuff together towards the end of the season. I think Montreal will be back. Like, they're already rebuilding. They're already ahead of the Bombers, I think. But I think the Bombers, you know, they didn't get much worse. They just, you know, it just seemed, you know, from somebody who lived here and, like, yeah. You know, a season ticket holder, it just seemed like, you know, going into last season was, why haven't they got a new quarterback? Why haven't they done anything with the line? Why haven't they done, like, these were things that haunted us through 2012. Why weren't they making these changes this year? You know, and I mean, and then it's like, you know, 10 games into the season, 8 games into the season, they fire the upper management, and we all knew that was coming, but, like, why wasn't that taken care of earlier? And it was just such a mess, and I think that just translated onto the field, right?
Yeah, and the word out of, and you can tell me yes or no, because what I understood, the word out of Winnipeg was, maybe they took the management team that they released and they got rid of, didn't know, weren't really football people. And they decided maybe they should bring in some football people, which they did, which is probably why they've reached to a more of a subtle group of guys to run the team, a young GM and a young coach, because they know these people personally because they come from the inner circle of football.
Yeah, and they were born and bred CFL, right?
Yeah. And before that, you had guys that really didn't understand the CFL running the team, and that seems kind of silly. When sitting on the outside, you know, I'm not here to criticize Winnipeg and their decision-making process, but when they said that they themselves said that the guys that were running the team weren't really football guys, that's a pretty telling thing right there, and it shouldn't surprise you that your team might have difficulty progressing. Now, you also mentioned
the one thing you can take away from that whole that whole situation with Brett Klitschko is that stadium. Could you hear me there?
Yeah, you went a little twisty there on your. Try it again.
Oh, yeah. Like, the one thing you could take away from Garth Butchko is that he got a stadium built.
Yes. Yes, and maybe that's all he was there to do.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, if that's what it was, you know, it's like, you know, if it's you got to go real bad, you got to be real bad for 2 years to get a stadium built, and you got a really nice stadium built. Well, you know, in the long term, maybe that's a good thing, right? But.
Well, maybe I should get your phone, his phone, get you to get me his phone number so I can introduce him to the people here in Toronto.
I'm sure he's looking for work.
Yeah, no, you know, and you're right, and we all agree, and most of the people in this room, most of these people in the room agree that the one beautiful thing about the CFL is that you can turn things around quickly. I mean, even the Argos that won a Grey Cup, they got a quarterback. Saskatchewan a few years ago was young, and they were young and unable to do very much. They made a change. Hamilton was on death's door, as you said, equal to Winnipeg, and they made it to the Grey Cup. You know, Calgary is, you know, probably the odd one in the group that they've been consistently good over the past few years. Now, we've only got about 30 seconds left, guys. I really appreciate our new listener, Derek. Thank you. And Alaska, thank you for joining us. As a player, it's really nice to talk to guys who are playing football outside of the NFL that give us the reason to believe that the game, as you said, Alaska, it's about playing more than it is where you're playing. You know, if you love playing football, it almost doesn't matter where you're playing. The Kennedys proved that. Thanks for calling, guys. We really appreciate it. We're on here Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and I look forward to hearing from you guys as well again. And it's always 10 to 12. Thanks for tuning in. And for the people who are listening, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the program for Friday night. We're back again Monday night.